Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Of Trade TV, day two of the AFL free agency period for 2020. We'll get to trades as well opening in a couple of days, but there's already plenty happening. I'm joined by Reece Humphrey from The Advertiser over in Adelaide, and we'll get to him very shortly for some updates on a lot of those South Australian players especially. So if you've got questions, fire them in, maybe especially if you're a Port or a Crows fan, but we'll take anything that's happening out there in the footy world for the next 20 minutes or so. If you've got want to find out what's happening in the trades, of course, all day, go to The Advertiser or The Herald Sun, any of the News Corp sites, click on the live blog we've got running, get a subscription, and that'll give you everything that's happening in trades. But of course, Reece, the big one that we've been talking about for quite a while, from the Crows, and paperwork finally came in yesterday from the Saints for Brad Crouch as a free agent, but it wasn't quite what the Crows were hoping for in terms of compensation. So can you perhaps just bring us up to speed on where that's all at?
Yeah, hit the nail on the head there, Al, in terms of what they were hoping for in compensation. I think they were relatively comfortable with the deal that he was being offered, in that the monetary value was somewhere around $700,000 to $800,000, depending on games played and what sort of triggers and that are involved. But I think that their general consensus was that $700,000+ would net them a first round draft pick compensation. And evidently, from what we hear, although it hasn't been made official, that is far from reality. In fact, not only may they not get an end of first round selection, it might be classed as a second round compensation pick. So the Crows have some serious thinking to do. They've talked the talk. Now it's a matter of whether they're going to walk the walk and match the bid that St Kilda have made. Of course, lodged the paperwork on Sunday. It's nearly coming up to 24 hours since then. And my mail is that I don't think we'll have a resolution today. So we may be still waiting on a decision from the Crows sometime on Tuesday.
I guess, yeah, they were hoping for pick. They've got pick one, obviously, Adelaide. So the first round combo pick would have been pick two, which we would have, I think they would have been pretty happy with that and let Brad become a Saint. But so now we're looking at pick 23, or I suppose end of first round or start of second round. There's not a huge difference there from Adelaide's point of view. But so we're looking around pick 23, and that could even get pushed back further if there's more once Academy kids come into it and more compensation kind of thing. So if Adelaide does match it, you know, where do we go from there? Is, you know, do they want St Kilda's top pick? Is that the thing they're after?
Well, yeah, it's an interesting observation, firstly, that you make about the compensation pick that they've supposedly been offered. I mean, if Adelaide finished fifth or sixth and we're looking at pick 14 or 15 thereabouts, and the compensation for Crouch would have been pick 17, do you think we would have batted an eyelid? Probably not. But the fact that it was going to come in at two, you wonder whether that influenced in any way the decision-making process to make sure that they weren't going to go to the draft with picks one and two. But, you know, that all depends on the value of the contract, of course, and other factors, which are a bit of a mystery, which we don't know because it's not made entirely public. But from here, I think Adelaide simply has to match it and demand a trade. I mean, you know, to go to war and say that you expect to get pick two in compensation and then be offered pick 22 or 23, it simply doesn't stack up. It's fanciful to believe that Adelaide will now turn around and go, okay, fair enough. If that's what it is, that's what it is. They've sort of got to put a flag in the ground now, in my opinion, and you know, not necessarily take a stand against Brad Crouch, but to take a stand against St Kilda and say that if you're only prepared to offer, you know, this much and it doesn't guarantee us the first round compensation that we supposedly wanted, like has happened with Carlton going after Zach Williams. They haven't had to give up their pick in a trade because they've offered enough to make sure that GWS are adequately compensated. Brisbane with Essendon, Joe Danaher again, they've offered it probably overs it to a degree, but it's made sure that they haven't had to trade for him. Then Adelaide have to simply say to St Kilda, well, we want your top pick. You want Crouch, you give us pick 15. If you're not prepared to give that up, then go to market, go and find another top draft pick or come up with a suite of players that's going to satisfy Adelaide's rebuilding strategy. And a couple of names that have been thrown around is young Webster and Luke Dunstan. Dunstan only played one game this year. He's played about 105 or so in his career. He's a South Australian. He's inside midfielder. Essentially would be a good replacement for Crouch. So I'd be going to work and having a look at their list if the pick's not forthcoming.
And if it all sort of breaks down, I mean, where could it end up? Is there any chance he could still end up at the Crows next year or even at another club?
I think the fact that Adelaide is saying that he's welcome back here and he loves the club and would be happy to have him is a total and utter charade. I think that both parties have made their stands very clear. The fact that he didn't finish in the top 10 in the best and fairest this year probably says a little bit about where the Crows rate him internally. I know he only played about 12 games, but there were three other guys that played the same amount of footy, Rory Sloane, Kyle Harding, and I think even Shane McAdam, that played very similar, if not maybe one less game, and still finished top 10 in the BNF. So I think that from about mid-year, when Crouch obviously hadn't re-signed, the club had made up its mind that they were going to be parting company. Crouch obviously went to market. My understanding is he spoke to five different clubs. He was sold on Brett Ratten at St Kilda, probably sold on the deal as well, if that was the most money on the table. The way that he's spoken since that meeting, he did an interview with Channel 9 about 2 weeks ago where he said that he's in need of a fresh start, where his career's at. He needs to go somewhere else. He needs to get out of Adelaide, and St Kilda's the right spot for him. I just can't see any practical way that Brad would still be at Adelaide next year. And if another club is to come knocking in the free agency window, well, they want to hurry up and get their skates on. Otherwise, he will be open slather in the trade market next week.
I've got a question here from Jack William on Facebook saying, is Brad Crouch really required for the Saints? So if the deal just gets a bit too hard for St Kilda, do they just walk away? I mean, how important do you think he is to sort of getting them, you know, the next step towards perhaps challenging for a premiership?
Not necessarily how important it is, but how much have they put into the process? I mean, clubs go down a certain path, don't they? They commit to a player essentially, and I assume behind the scenes have said to Brad that we'll get it done, you know, no matter what it takes. So, oh, look, certainly they'll be happy to add him to their midfield mix. They've made giant strides with their really clever and specific recruiting last season, which led to a finals campaign in Ratten's first year this year. So no doubt it'll be an important piece of the puzzle. But I think it's probably more the personal commitment they've made to just to try and find a way to get it done. So I don't think St Kilda will walk away lightly, that's for sure.
All right. Well, we'll definitely be watching that one very closely over the next couple of days, or maybe even longer. We'll see what happens. Just bring people up to speed with some of the other trade news that's happened today. So interesting, just talking about whether the Crows will match a bid there on a free agent. GWS became, I think, in 9 years of free agency, the first club to do that this morning when they confirmed they are matching Geelong's bid for Jeremy Cameron. So we sort of had a fair inkling that that was coming, but now they have to hash out a trade. How do you see that one playing out, Rhys?
Yeah, rightly so as well. I mean, if you were GWS and you were standing to lose, you know, the Coleman medalist from, you know, last season, then you'd probably dig your heels in as well. I think it's a classic case of looking at what Geelong have got in their kit bag and going, well, I reckon we can get a bit more out of them if we go to a trade, more so than if we just have to cop the compensation pick, which I think, correct me if I'm wrong, was going to land at about 10 or 11 for the Giants, around 11-ish.
Geelong, yeah, well, they finished just outside the 8, didn't they? So, yeah.
So there you go. So Geelong have got 3 first-round draft picks, thanks, of course, to the Tim Kelly deal when he went to West Coast last season. So the Giants, more so again, and I think with Adelaide's thinking of matching Crouch, is not so much that we actually want Jeremy Cameron or Brad Crouch to stay at this club. It's we actually think we can get more value if we go to a trade than if we just cop the compensation pick. So it'll be a very interesting test of Geelong's nerve. I mean, they've already, we know the list is getting older and, you know, they're probably due to go to the draft and regenerate a little bit. But how badly do they want to secure Cameron? Are they prepared to part with 2 picks or an up-and-coming player?
Yeah, no, that is very interesting. All right, who else has happened? So the other things that have come in today that are sort of breaking news are more trade requests that will have to play out once the trade period opens on Wednesday. Jesse Hogan has requested a trade from Fremantle and he wants to play for GWS, so maybe a bit of a Jeremy Cameron replacement there. And Ben Brown has made his decision and he's requested a trade to Melbourne. So probably interested particularly in that Ben Brown one. I think Essendon was another club that he was potentially considering, but given the way North Melbourne sort of shopped him around this year, I mean, my feeling is it seems like they don't have a huge amount of bargaining power in that trade. What do you think Melbourne would have to give up for Ben Brown and how does he fit in for them next year?
Yeah, well, not much, I hope, because I'm a Melbourne supporter. And as much as I like Benny Brown, I'm a little bit concerned about his body and whether his best footy is behind him or not. But the fact of the matter is the Demons need a key forward. I mean, Sam Wiedemann showed a bit this year, but certainly not enough to suggest that he's going to be able to hold down a key forward spot week in, week out and deliver Melbourne back to the finals. Jesse Hogan obviously didn't work and now he's gone from Fremantle on his way to the Giants. Luke Jackson looks like that he's going to be a player there as long as Max Gawn can continue to hold down the ruck spot. So they need Ben Brown. What are they prepared to pay? I think North Melbourne likely to ask for Melbourne's pick in their 20s, I've read somewhere. So that's probably, look, personally, I think it's a little bit overs, but it may be what's required to get the deal done. And hopefully that he can straighten up the Melbourne attack. The Hogan one I find a little bit interesting going to GWS. I mean, clearly, like you said, they need a replacement for when Cameron leaves. But I'm surprised. I mean, I don't know what they're going to have to give up to get him. But for Hogan, if he couldn't get it to work at Fremantle in his home state, I just wonder how much of a gamble is it him going to a third club and whether it'll work out for him at GWS. But the Giants obviously think they can get the best out of him. So good luck to them.
Yeah, I think the statement from Hogan came out and said he wanted to get out of WA, but I think he wanted to get out of Victoria as well a couple of years ago. So, he's got some other challenges, Jesse, as well as even getting his body right on the footy field. So, sure. We'll see how that one plays out. Going back to the Adelaide club, the Crows are obviously pretty active, and they would want to be after collecting the wooden spoon this year, and they'll have pick one, but few players on the move. So we've already seen, I think I saw a picture today of Rory Atkins in his new Gold Coast polo. So that's a confirmed deal. And I think the Crows would have been reasonably happy with the compo they got for him.
Oh, definitely. I think, was it a second round pick or something like that? I mean, it was a long-term deal to go to Gold Coast, which again, sort of just makes the Crouch compensation pick all the more confusing. I mean, they're going to lose. If you're comparing Brad Crouch to Rory Atkins, you're almost going to get a similar pick in return, aren't you? So it's very interesting. I think, look, the fact that Atkins didn't play much in footy in the second half of the year is suggested that Matthew Nix didn't believe that he was a really important part of their future. So once he decided to look elsewhere and could find that deal at the Gold Coast, the Crows probably couldn't sign off on all the paperwork quick enough once they knew what the compensation pick was going to be. So, yeah, a few comings and goings, a couple more to play out. I mean, I know they are in the market for Fantasia, but in the end he's elected Port Adelaide from what we understand. And it sounds like the Power are going to be able to get that deal done. And Adelaide are going to continue to reload via the draft. So maybe they're going to be more active in free agency or trade next year.
A couple of other Crows that have been talked about potentially leaving. Kyle Hartigan going to play for Hawthorn, we believe. Although I don't think that we haven't seen any paperwork on that yet.
No.
And Talia's name has been mentioned as well. But you see what's happening with him.
Yeah, I think Talia, there was probably maybe a couple of clubs inquiring about him, but I think he's got a year to run on his contract. So I expect him to fulfil that at the Crows, and then maybe next year, whether he recommits or goes to Victoria, will be up in the air. But Hartigan definitely will find his way to Hawthorn, from what I understand, is to be a three-year contract. Adelaide was not willing to offer beyond one season for Hartigan, so you can probably imagine their surprise when they were told that Hawthorn were prepared to offer three. I think the reason that it hasn't been lodged as a free agency deal is because, from what I understand, if Hawthorn bring in Hartigan as a free agent and lose Smith, then the compensation for losing Smith may not be as great. I stand to be corrected there, but I think it's a bit easier for the Hawks to do that via a trade rather than a free agency deal. So we may not see that unfold until next week. But definitely Hartigan's played his last game at Adelaide and will be at Hawthorn next year.
Yeah, I think that's right. That was the old Eddie Betts situation. I think the Eddie Betts went to Adelaide and Carlton lost their compensation for him because they got Dale Thomas from Collingwood or something. So, the formula, as you say, it is a bit murky the way the AFL works it out. But if you have something coming in and something going out, they can sort of effectively cancel each other out. So, yeah, that's right. Correct. So that might just be why that one sort of hasn't happened yet. And the other player that the Crows are hopefully getting, has asked the Crows will get Jackson Hatley from the Giants. Is that right?
Yeah, that'll definitely happen. I think it's just probably a matter of priorities now. Let's work out what we need to get done early, and then the club can position itself to know, right, well, these are the picks we've got to play with now and this is how we can satisfy GWS's needs. I don't expect that to hit any hurdles. Hatley's made it known where he wants to go. He's out of contract and he'll be coming home to South Australia next year.
And lastly on the Crows, any early word on what they might be doing with pick one? They've also got pick nine, so have some early picks to play with. There's some local South Australians who are high up in draft calculations. Riley Silthorpe is the one that we hear a fair bit about. Anything you've heard on that, or will they lodge a bid, do you reckon, for Hugo Hagen, who will be going to the Bulldogs but has been talked about as a likely or potential number one?
Yeah, I mean, there's no harm in lodging a bid for Hugo Hagen, is there? I mean, Western Bulldogs are clearly going to match it. And then I guess the player that Adelaide then bring in with effectively the first pick in the draft isn't actually the first pick, so it doesn't carry any of the number one baggage and the pressure and whatnot. Although I did read a story in the Herald Sun a few weeks ago, they might miss out on their draft number one draft payday or whatever it is as a reward. But certainly they're keen on Thilthorpe. I mean, I don't know how keen they are on the interstate guys, but they've certainly done a lot of study and a lot of homework on him. Obviously, a big key forward from West Adelaide, moves really well, played a bit of league footy, battled in the second half of the year with some injuries, so didn't get to play a full season, but I would have thought that he'd be a pretty safe bet. But certainly a lot of noise coming out of WA about one of their forwards, Logan McDonald, played really solid footy at league level over there, made the team of the year. He'd be a perfect fit as well if they're looking for a long-term replacement for the key forward post that Tex Walker's held down and Darcy Fogarty hasn't quite or may not come on as they expect. And another one from Victoria, Elijah Holland, son of Ben, actually grew up a Crows supporter, I'm told, because he was born here when Ben was playing at West Adelaide. So he's another one to keep an eye on. I don't think they're going to have two bites of the cherry there with pick 1 and 9. They're either going to have, obviously going to take one of those key forwards with 1 and then reassess with 9 whether they go for a midfielder or obviously something else other than the bigs that are left on the table.
And switching across town to Port Adelaide, haven't heard a lot out of them. Obviously, they made a prelim, so their list isn't in too bad a shape. But picking up Orazio Fantasia, as you mentioned, we think. But have you got any idea of what they're going to have to pay for him or what else Port might be up to?
Yeah, Port Adelaide definitely keen on Fantasia. Came in really late and quiet. I think Chris Davies, the footy manager, just a few weeks ago says, I've never been asked more about a bloke that I've never spoken about. So someone was speaking to him because as soon as he made himself available, he nominated Port Adelaide. So he didn't do that in a thin air. But anyway, that was a bit of a ducks and drakes. But I expect Fantasia to make his way to Port Adelaide. I think that they'll like him slotting in there in their forward line. Really dangerous small forward crumbing to big Charlie Dixon. They expect to have to pay a second rounder, whether it's one this year. I think they've got a pick in the 20s or a future second rounder. And then then it comes down to whether they need to throw in the steak knives as well and have to say farewell to Riley Bonner, who's been a pretty consistent player when he's had his opportunity, but he's just been in and out of the team. I think Essendon probably would have some interest in Bonner because obviously they've got to replace the running runoff halfback that Saad leaves with him going to Carlton. So, yeah, certainly the Port Adelaide, there is noise there and interest there that they can get the Fantasia deal done, second round pick and possibly a player.
And looking at the draft from the power point of view, well, both South Australian clubs have father-son prospects potentially. Taj Schofield at the power, he's probably higher rated than Luke Edwards, Tyson Edwards' son, is that fair?
Oh, yeah, pretty. I mean, 6 of 1, half a dozen the other. I think Luke Edwards, I mean, first of all, they've got to want to go to the club, don't they? And my understanding is that Luke Edwards is yet to indicate that he definitely does want to nominate for the Crows, so there's some uncertainty there. Certainly Schofield's keen. Obviously, his old man's on the coaching panel there, and I expect him to find his way to Port Adelaide as a father-son pick. Another interesting name, not a father-son, but an academy selection, which is at play in Adelaide, is James Borlase. The son of Darryl Borlase, Port Adelaide Magpies premiership star, but tied to the Crows through their NGA Academy by the fact that he was born in Egypt and then moved to Adelaide in a Crows zone, so they can claim him if they want. But apparently he had a very strong finish to the season at sample level with Sturt. And there's been a bit of interest from clubs in Victoria, but the Crows may have cooled on him a little bit. So a little bit to play out there before we know whether James is going to be taken as an Academy pick at Westlake.
All right, we'll just not too much time to go, but we'll just wrap up with a few other questions just about other clubs that are coming in. And we talked about Essendon with Fantasia. Michael Rubenstein asking, who is Essendon looking at? Says they need a forward. We've heard about Dunkley and Caldwell. Where's sort of Essendon placed? We know they're always an interesting club to watch at this time of year.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you wonder whether they had any interest in Ben Brown coming across, and obviously that's not going to happen. And Danaher leaving leaves a big hole, so they're going to have to find some sort of long-term replacement for him. Maybe they do go to the draft and take their medicine. We know they've got, I think it's back-to-back picks now, isn't it, 6 and 7, now that Danaher compensation has come through. So they've certainly got the opportunity to pounce there and maybe rebuild if they can just manage to get through. I mean, they found a way with Danaher barely playing any football this year. So while there is a hole there that they may just have to be patient a little bit longer, and if they can get a key forward with one of their first-round draft picks, then that could set them up for the long term.
What about, as a Melbourne fan, you mentioned earlier, the McDonald brothers, Tom and Oscar, where do you think they'll be next year?
Yeah, starting with Tom, I mean, I don't know where they're going to go. Apparently Collingwood are interested in him, but, yeah, disappointed to let him go and to see him go. He's got another 2 years to run on his contract, but I'm just a little bit confused as to why he was playing forward in the first place. I mean, I always saw him as a defender first, pinch hitting forward second, and suddenly he was trying to hold down full forward most weeks once Jesse Hogan had definitely departed. So, you know, wasn't always getting a game under Simon Goodwin this year, and I wondered whether, you know, they could have just found a spot for him down back. But I guess with the recruitment of Stephen May and Oscar playing reasonably good footy, that there just wasn't room for him. So, yeah, it's a bit of a one that I think if they both leave, it'll be one that Melbourne supporters are left scratching their head going, so what happened there? How did it escalate to this? But look, if Melbourne can go to the trade table, pick something up, if Collingwood are keen and get a deal done, then maybe that's for the best for both player and the club now, given where Tommy's career is at in particular.
And last one, I'll just finish off. A couple of people brought up the name Jaden Stephenson at Collingwood, who's been I'm not sure if there's anything official there about whether he's up for trade, but his name's been floated around. What are your thoughts on where Jaden's at with his career? Obviously, just absolutely exploded out of the blocks, but has had a few struggles this year.
Hasn't looked the same since his long-term ban, was it, for the gambling? I think probably Collingwood need to show a little bit of patience. I mean, Bucks clearly loves him, kept picking him late in the season, you know, when his form probably suggested that he didn't deserve his spot. So if he's clearly got the backing of the coach, then perhaps it's going to buy him a little bit of time and then he'll be in black and white for a little bit longer. But clearly they've been pretty ruthless down there, aren't they? With the reports that we're hearing about Adam Treloar and phone calls and being told that the senior players don't want you anymore. I mean, gee whiz, you obviously don't have to do a lot wrong where there's maybe a lot that we don't know that can land you on the outer. So I would expect Collingwood to stick with Stevenson for a little bit longer. But yeah, as for Treloar, then that horse looks to have bolted, and now it's up to another club who's going to be the lucky club to probably fall into him, because he's certainly an A-grade midfielder at his best.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. Yeah, that'll be definitely one of the big names to watch over the next 10 days or so. Thanks very much, Bruce. We'll wrap it up there. We'll be back tomorrow around the same time, maybe getting just before the cup. We'll still be blogging the trade, so follow us all day on, as I said, the Advertiser, the Herald Sun. Go there for all your trade content. And thanks again, Bruce, and we'll see you again soon.
Good on you. Thanks, Al.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Eastern and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com, RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring. Right.